Welcome to another episode of the Capital Playbook. My name is Charles Williams. I am the owner and managing member of Pioneer Realty Capital. Today, we're extremely excited to come to you. We're still here in San Diego, 2023, at the MBA Mortgage Bankers Association CREF Conference. And for you that are interested, CREF stands for Commercial Real Estate Finance. And today, that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about finance. But the legal aspect of finance from a lender's perspective. Now, if you own apartments, you certainly want to listen to this particular program. We have an expert with us today, Mr. Dewey Nguyen.
Yes.
Mr. Nguyen is with the law firm Carlton Fields. It's a national law firm with over 330 attorneys. But what's most interesting is they spend a lot of time representing lenders, especially the agency lenders, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who are making these loans. And so if you're going to be looking for a loan at some point in the future that's an agency loan, you really want to understand the lender's perspective. So please join me in welcoming Mr. Dewey Nguyen as we engage in this conversation. How are you doing, Dewey?
I'm good. Thank you, Charles, for inviting me here.
Well, thanks for coming. You enjoying the show here in San Diego?
Yes.
a little bit
colder than expected, but yes, awesome to be here.
Well, that was my surprise too. When I got here, I realized I didn't bring a coat because I'm leaving Texas. That was cold, and I thought I was coming to sunny California, and didn't realize it was cold here too.
That's right.
So, Dewey, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background. How did you get into law, and how did you get to the position that you're in right now?
Sure. I actually wasn't born in the United States. I came to the U.S. when I was 7.
Okay.
From Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in Rock Hill, South Carolina.
Mm.
And, you know, the funny thing is my favorite subject was social study. English. I just did well in those subjects. And I love history. I actually went to Duke University for undergrad, even though in my high school, I went to a school, shout out to the Governor's School for Science and Mathematics.
Okay.
South Carolina, a very good school. But I think I failed them because I ended up wanting to be an attorney, and just to, you know, and particularly a transactional attorney,
mm-hmm.
to help people. I'm not very adversarial. I like to bring people to the table.
Yeah.
And I thought that this particular niche would enable me to do that.
Oh, okay. So where did you end up going to law school?
So from Duke, I went to Duke for undergrad, did my poli sci degree there. From Duke, I ended up going to Notre Dame Law School, mm-hmm. in Indiana. Duke was really good at basketball, and I needed a good football team.
You needed a good football team. You wanted to cover all the bases,
that's right? That's right.
Well, good for you. So, so when you came out of law school, how did you start your career?
You know, I actually clerked for a time with the Chief Justice of the South Carolina Supreme Court. So I went back to South Carolina, mm-hmm. and really worked on the appellate side,
mm-hmm.
You know, shadowing the judge, worked with other clerks,
mm-hmm.
And we would assist, review cases.
Mm-hmm.
And it really gave me kind of the broader picture of the practice of law.
Like, right.
Not only did I see the litigation, but I see all the way up,
mm-hmm.
to appeal side. You know, you would see real estate issue, you would see insurance issue.
Right.
So this, when I am doing what I'm doing now, mm-hmm. it's really helped me just kind of see the bigger picture. Not only, hey, you're doing these documents, but I'm already thinking about, gosh,
how would that be defended? How would it you represent?
Exactly.
The court?
Yeah. If so, we want to try to avoid litigation here, mm-hmm. and that if you're a good transactional attorney on both sides, whether you work for the lender or you're working for the borrower, you're trying to avoid litigation.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think, and tell me if you feel this way as well, that sometimes when borrowers engage with a lender in a financial transaction, sometimes they perhaps underestimate the potential for litigation. Do you find that to be true in your case?
I do, and you know, I think a lot of I think investors or even just people getting into the industry, maybe the most experience that they have with this is a residential closing when they bought their first home. And so, you know, you don't really hire your own attorney on a residential closing. I'm pretty sure there's maybe not a lender's counsel or not one that's heavily involved. And I mean, I don't know how many people go to their closing and actually sat down and spend 5 hours reading the loan documents. I think most people experience is they just sign it, move on with their life, and probably nothing's going to happen. They probably bought a title policy. Most of them probably didn't even look at it. But, you know, when you're dealing with commercial properties, there's just so much more hair, so much more risk that really you need a good attorney. And for some properties on the residential side, you need a good attorney. But particularly on the commercial side, it really helps depending on the products you're working with. CMBS, Conduits Life. You know, sometimes you need to engage borrower's counsel. And especially if you don't have experience, you don't know what you're doing. For the first deal, hire an attorney. And I'm a lender's attorney, so I don't, you know, it's, but
so you're a credible source.
Some borrowers, if they try to go along, they end up being worse off getting into those situations where, you know, they're in default because they didn't know that they were going to violate the terms of the loan agreement. So if it's not your field and you're not used to reading long, long loan documents, having a good attorney to accompany you along the journey and saying, hey, watch out for this pitfall. You have this particular situation. You need to tell the lender that so that they can incorporate it into their underwriting, incorporate it into, if necessary, the loan documents, so that you're not found in default later.
And oftentimes, the folks that are involved with originating and making the loan may not be the same folks involved if there's a default determined.
Exactly.
So there could be the servicing part of that.
That's right.
Which is a totally different part of the originating folks. And so so therefore, when you're making that decision about negotiating your loan documents, we can't assume that, well, you know what, these guys, you know, they understand what I'm trying to accomplish, because it's a totally different group that's looking at it later on.
Yeah, and I tell them, you know, it depends on the product. I work with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac product, and, you know, there's certain programs like the small balance loan. If your loan is under $7.5 million, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae has a streamlined process, not only on the underwriting, but also on the legal side. So, you know, for Freddie Mac SBL, for example, you could negotiate the loan documents. But the good news, and I say it's the good news, is from my perspective, it's fairly even balanced. You know, the semi-government owned, you know, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, the semi-government agency, semi-private, the lenders they work with, they all use the same loan documents. So there's not like they're going out there trying to screw it one way or screw it the other. They really want to streamline that product for you. And if, of course, if you don't take my word for it, hire an attorney, read the documents as you should. But, you know, when you're dealing with those products, again, if this is your first time in the space, hire an attorney.
And not just any attorney, because I'm sure the guy that handled my car wreck might not be the best attorney.
Get a commercial real estate attorney
with some experience.
But if this is your second time, and you know, you know what you're doing, and like in your first deal, get your attorney to copy you on all the emails. You should not be an absent borrower. Like, keep track of what your attorney is doing, because not all attorneys are made equal. And if you are there, they're gonna be more responsive to your need, to the lender's need. And if your first deal is over, you kind of get the lay of the land. You know, for some Freddie Mac SBL product, for and depending on the lender and depending on the producer, talk to your, and I use the term producers, their broker, originators, talk to them, because sometimes they'll say, hey, you can do it without an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Without borrower's counsel.
On some loans.
On some loans. Right. On Freddie Mac, on others, definitely. Mm-hmm. It's worth it.
Yeah, very good. Now, from the lender's perspective, when they are producing what we in general call loan documents, which would call be a loan agreement, a security pledge agreement.
Yeah.
You know, there could be
a guarantee agreement,
which now these are non-recourse loans. But there is a guarantee agreement in it.
All right.
So that seems like kind of an oxymoron.
I get it.
So explain to us
how
the guarantee portion works in a non-recourse loan.
Okay. So when it's non-recourse, usually, you know, in the Freddie Mac product, you got to read the guarantee and you got to read the loan agreement. There's certain sections that deal with it. I would say Section 3 in both the loan agreement for SBL products. But you are guaranteeing essentially what the industry called bad boy acts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fraud.
Okay.
That's misrepresentation. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other host of bad things you shouldn't be doing.
Right.
And so if you're not doing any of those things,
mm-hmm.
then the loan is truly non-recourse.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't know if all viewers know the difference between non-recourse and recourse, but recourse is the lender can go after you
personally.
Mm-hmm. Non-recourse is the lender will go after the mortgage property.
Right.
And so if you're doing everything you should be doing,
mm-hmm.
and bad, you know, economic condition, the market fall, something that puts you in a default position,
mm-hmm.
well, the loan is going to be non-recourse,
mm-hmm.
because you didn't commit any of those bad boy acts.
Right.
So, yeah, you sign a guarantee, and your guarantee is you have to read the guarantee to see and the loan agreement to see exactly what you're guaranteeing. But generally speaking,
mm-hmm.
you're guaranteeing, hey, I'm not going to commit fraud. I'm not going to commit those so-called bad boy acts.
Okay, very good. So, and now let me ask you this. It's always been my position when I'm dealing with non-agency loans. Let's say it's a loan from an insurance company, a loan from a commercial lender, perhaps a bank, and I have that option of choosing full recourse and non-recourse. My position has always been that when I read and consider the bad boy carve-out and I read the security pledge agreement and guarantee agreement of a quote-unquote recourse loan, there's really not a lot of difference.
You got to read you got to read the loan documents and you got to see what is, but you know, with the agency product, that promise you they're not trying to get you for market conditions.
Right.
It's just
but some of these other lenders,
yeah,
you know, it could be and the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, a non-recourse loan, they may price higher,
mm-hmm.
but when you look at the bad boy carve-out in that quote-unquote non-recourse loan,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty much a full recourse loan. So you may as well just sign for full recourse and take the discount on the rate. That's always been my perspective.
I would say consult your attorney.
Right. That's an area that could be negotiated at the very least. Right?
Exactly. And you know, it's non-recourse as to market conditions.
Right.
Recourse as to bad boy acts.
Yeah. So. Now, we talked about those small balance agency loans that are under $7.5 million. The fact that those loan documents have been designed to really be fair and balanced on both sides. But when you get above that to the more conventional loans where you're, you know, in that $10 million to $100 million range, what areas do you find that there's some flexibility from the lender's perspective that can be negotiated?
Well, when you're in that range, lender will, you know, if you're working with Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac product, lender will consider loan document modification to tailor the documents to fit your situation. Maybe you anticipate some future transfer,
mm-hmm.
and you want to get that documented ahead of time.
Mm.
Maybe you're about to do a major improvement on the property, and mm-hmm. you know that's going to happen, like you're going to build a pool,
mm-hmm.
and you want that documented ahead of time instead of leaving it to, you know, the future servicing, and mm-hmm. and that could be a yes or no situation, then that is, the lender is willing to work with you more in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, even if the loan was under the threshold,
mm-hmm.
the lender is willing to work with you, but what maybe will happen is they'll move it from the small balance program
mm-hmm.
to a conventional program.
Mm.
Because for example, if you have a regulatory agreement on the property and mm. depending on the regulatory agreement, it might not fit, if it doesn't meet certain criteria, it might not fit within the small balance loan program, because really what they're trying to do is streamline that process for those vanilla easy loan. Mm-hmm. They want you to get the best streamlined experience. But for those properties that just have more hair, you really do need the additional attention.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now when we're talking about those loans that what we'll call conventional,
mm-hmm.
That can't be necessarily standardized for whatever reason, what are some of the areas of flexibility that you've seen from the lender's perspective?
As I mentioned already, the lender's willing to do modification. They're mm-hmm. willing to consider more complex situations,
mm-hmm.
Like organizational structure. Maybe
okay.
you want to do things in a different way. They're willing to consider your, future.
Now, when you say organizational, what you're really talking about, if there's a transfer of any portion of the ownership during the term of the loan.
Yes, that's one thing I'm talking about too.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there's a preference across the board for your bar to be an LLC.
Okay.
But maybe if you had something a little bit more complex, a
mm-hmm.
trust, for example, a real estate trust.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a whole lot of them, but you know, that kind of crest might be better considered in the conventional space, where
mm-hmm.
they have time to basically scrutinize the
mm-hmm.
risk and scrutinize the deal a little bit more closely.
Mm-hmm. So now, in your experience, you've seen instances of unintentional default triggered
yep.
by some action on the borrower's part. What are some of those things that you've seen where they have unintentionally triggered a default on their loan?
Well, there's unintentional and also intentional.
Of course, yeah.
And
we're going to assume that nobody in our audience would intentionally.
But I do want to point before I get to unintentional
right.
is that sometimes borrowers want these loans so much
mm-hmm.
and
they're willing to.
Well, here's the thing, that they make misrepresentation, but the
mm-hmm.
thing is, maybe they don't have to. And what I want to emphasize is, you know, for example, economic crisis,
mm-hmm.
2008, 2010, people were going into default. And it's not, these are good people, just bad economic situation.
Right.
Well, some people are ashamed
mm-hmm.
and they don't disclose this.
Mm.
And maybe to them, they're like, well, you know, I had a lot of good excuses and they're not bad people.
Mm.
But for whatever reason, maybe they're reluctant to be forthright with the lender.
Mm.
And I had a situation like that where if he had just disclosed the information that he had some issues in the past, probably the lender could have worked through the issues
mm-hmm.
with that person.
Right.
But because they didn't, well, the lender, of course, they did the due diligence, they found out, and now that person's kind of blacklisted.
Mm.
And the industry is small. There's only Fannie Mae, there's only Freddie Mac,
right.
and then I guess there's your local bank.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's really, it's just honesty is really the best policy.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's going to save you trouble
mm-hmm.
because if they can't do the deal with you, maybe, you know, your local bank can do the deal
mm-hmm.
and work with your particular situation. So honesty. So that's the
right.
intentional
right.
default. And I you know, it happens more than we would like.
Yeah.
And I think it's people not understanding that
Yeah.
Lenders are open-minded. They recognize, you know, something's
bad
beyond your control.
Right. And just to reemphasize before we talk about the unintentional, and it's something we've mentioned on the show multiple times, you cannot go into a legal agreement with the intent of being dishonest.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these are professionals and not amateurs, not rookies. You can't assume they're not going to trust you, but verify what you said is actually true. There's a lot of money that you will pay as a borrower for what are called due diligence fees.
That's right.
They're collecting that money to do due diligence. So don't assume that there's no due diligence being done.
And don't think that if you get the loan is the end of the story.
Right.
And the nightmare scenario is someone maybe didn't think they'd do anything that bad. I mean, the rent roll, they made up some numbers because mm-hmm. maybe they just didn't do good paperwork.
Right.
After the loan, the discrepancy,
mm-hmm.
and it's discovered. Well, now they're in a situation where they, if the lender wants, can go after them.
Absolutely.
For default. So yeah. you're just putting, you know, maybe you don't even have a bad intention. Mm-hmm. It's just maybe you're sloppy. And this is where I said, if you're a sophisticated borrower and you've done this, you're organized, God bless you.
Mm.
But if you're not, and this is where having a good attorney, just making sure that you're in compliance, it's going to save you a lot of trouble down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's talk about those areas that you've seen, and we may have touched on it inadvertently in some ways, but these unintentional defaults. What have you seen in your career?
Well, as we talked about, mm-hmm. If you're not reading the loan documents
mm-hmm.
And you're not reading the default provisions,
mm-hmm.
for example, in the agency space, there's mm-hmm. a particularly Freddie Mac SBL. In conventionals, they also have a longer, it's called SPE provisions, mm-hmm. single purpose entity.
Mm-hmm.
In the SVR space, they have something called SAE, single asset entity, which is less restrictions, but similar type of concept in mm-hmm. that you can't, the borrower entity cannot mm-hmm. own more than the mortgage property.
Right.
And hopefully it's discovered in the loan, but some people, you know, they'll
want to recycle an entity.
On the recycle,
they'll save $1,200 on a $30 million transaction.
Exactly. Right? Or you know, small pop, mom and pop, they'll close the deal. They did everything right, and
yeah.
then later on they decide I'm gonna have the bar own another entity,
right.
or another property, or maybe my home.
Right.
And those are kind of what. Unintentional because they didn't read the loan agreement
mm-hmm.
and they, you know, got themselves into trouble and maybe they'll get away with it, but maybe they are putting themselves at risk
uh-huh.
if found out of, you know, being called into default. And
mm-hmm.
as I say, if you're interested in agency loan, that's really, you know, there's HUD, there's Fannie, mm-hmm. there's Freddie. There's not a whole lot of places to go.
Right.
If you kind of, you know, mess it up with one lender, because they talk to each other.
Right. Of course. I mean, that's what we're doing here at the show, talking to each other. Right.
So the other unintentional aspect is really your organizational structure.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you're doing residential, you're used to borrowing in your own name.
Right.
But when you're doing these commercial deals, most attorneys, most lenders, many lenders will require you to form, you know, limited liability companies,
mm-hmm.
LLC. And you, when you do that, you have this, you set up this organizational structure
mm-hmm.
and you present that to the lender. And you have, you know, you designate certain people as manager.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lenders really care. Really, really care about who controls
right that entity
because
mm-hmm.
they, you know, typically that's going to be your guarantor
mm-hmm.
Because hey, the manager is the guy that can do the bad boy acts.
Mm-hmm.
So where it's, I guess, unintentional is the deal closes. You know, I don't want to be a manager anymore. Let's give it to my brother-in-law.
Mm.
Or you know, I need some more investors in the deal. So I'm going to, you know, dilute my share, sell some share to some, you know, who is pushing, depending on the loan, over 25%. So they're going to own 25% or more of the entity now. And, you know, they don't tell the lender that. They don't get the lender's consent. And so later on, when they're trying to do an assumption, or even, you know, that, and it's found out, well, they're in a default position. And it's really unintentional.
Right.
So you really need to, if you're not going to do an attorney, you really need to know, read those restrictions in the loan agreement closely.
Yeah. So now there's a lot that's changing with regards to agency lending. A lot of it has to do with the increase in interest rates. What impact do you see interest rates having on loans and perhaps how that's maybe changing loan agreements moving forward? What have you seen that, you know, in this evolving environment that we're in right now?
Well, I can tell you my typical fourth quarter leading up to Christmas is, man, I'm lucky if I get my Christmas day off, you know?
Everybody's trying to get loans.
No, that's right. That people, you know, we're so busy. And it was the opposite of, you know, near the end of 2002, interest rates keep going up. And that's a real shock factor for borrowers. And so it had a chilling effect on the market, of course. But, you know, back in 1996, when my parents bought their homes, they bought, you know, their homes for around 5-6% interest. And so it's just, we've been in a low interest rate environment for so long that 5-7%, it's a real shocker.
Right.
And people are just kind of getting used to it. But, you know, there was a period in the 80s, runaway inflation, when interest rate was even worse than that.
Yeah, 12% was a good rate back in the 80s.
That's right.
Some places.
That's right. And so I think we're just waiting, well, hopefully the Feds to stop hiking the interest rate.
But, or stop doing it so quickly. I think we can adjust if they don't do it every quarter, right?
That's right. Well, you know, they have their own fights, which is with inflation.
Right.
So, you know, it's hard on everybody. It's hard on everyone. And, you know, what I can tell you is you can't control the rates. And if you ask me to make a prediction where the rates is going to go, I'm not brave enough to do it. But what I can tell you is, you know, you can look at your assumptions, maybe assume a lower interest loan and explore those types of deals. And then I can tell you too, and again, this goes to, I do agency, but I love the product. And I think they are so competitive on interest rate, because in February, Freddie Mac, SBL, for example, they lowered the interest rate for a little bit. They took a hit to their own to be competitive in the market, because you asked me, you know, what's the effect on rate? Well, when it's slow enough, you know, Freddie, Fannie, they're going to go out there and they're going to try to get deal flows going. So you really should take a look, talk to your producers to see if, you know, maybe you can get a better rate than you think you could.
Now, Freddie and Fannie have some, they have their standard programs, but they also have some special programs around energy efficiency.
That's right.
Can you tell us what those programs are and how they benefit the borrower?
Well, you know, the in Fannie Mae world, they're called green programs.
Okay.
And similar. So, you know, we are on, everybody's getting an EV.
Right.
Everyone's trying to you know, save water, save electricity. And so Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, usually in the conventional space, I don't see that as much in
the small balance
for SBLs. But, you know, if you're willing to make certain improvements to your property, you know, efficiency to meet these green standards, you can get discounts on your interest, and it's a win-win for everyone. You know, this is gonna, you're gonna get the saving in the long run. The borrower is gonna get the benefit, and Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, even though, you know, they're for profit,
right,
but they're mission driven. Mm. And what a lot of maybe our viewers don't know is that, you know, they are into affordables. They are into greens. Mm. They really, really want to make, you know, before ESG was a thing, I think Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are kind of like ESG. They're trying to incentivize good behavior that's going to benefit the country, benefit the state, benefit the city.
Okay, yeah. Now, so with those green programs, you know, ESG is the center, environmental, social, governance, is that what it stands for? But it, right now it's kind of a, one of those, you know, you check the box and we're going to assume that you're actually doing these things,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, but we talked about these defaults, intentional and unintentional. Do you see in the future where they will start tracking that?
And they do. I mean, they're going to, within the loan documents, when you agree to the green program, they have, you know, criteria if you got to install certain faucets, if you got to make certain repairs, they're going to track that. I mean, you have to show that you've actually done these things. So, you know, again, if you make a commitment, you got to go through with it.
And then if they don't, that could become
there are post-closing inspections. I mean, that could be built in, but you know, there are compliance mechanism, reporting mechanisms. Maybe, you know, I don't do so much of the nitty-gritty of servicing, but it certainly is built into the loan document. So it's not like, you know, it's just paper,
right?
Something that's not enforced.
It's something that's real,
of course.
But it was a real advantage to that borrower who complies with those ESG programs and implement those energy conservation measures.
The green,
able to get a lower rate.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Obviously, you have a lot of experience. Your law firm has a lot of experience in representing the lenders, and you're probably in the best position to give advice to someone who's perhaps maybe looking for a Fannie or Freddie loan in the future. If you were to think of 3 to 4 things that you would recommend to someone in our audience who may consider applying for an agency loan, what would those recommendations be?
Number one is they're called different things depending on which side you work: brokers, originators, producer, and find a good producer that you trust that will go and hustle for you. And what I mean is, you know, a lot of times those guys don't do anything. They just get my business and then they
collect 1%.
Yeah, they collect my fees, but they make a huge difference. They're your main advocate within the lender. And you know, the more I work and the deals that go smoothly, that close and everybody's happy, is you've got a good producer on board. So if you find that one guy, and if you need any recommendations, if you find that one guy, you know, work with that. So that, you know, we're a relationship industry.
Right.
And so, you know, repeat business, word of mouth, referral, find your producer, work with a really good one. And as I said, the really good ones, they're going to go out there
and advocate
for you. So that's number one.
Okay.
To make the borrower's life easier. Number two is consider an agency loan. Consider Freddie Mac, consider Fannie Mae. I know they have some hoops sometimes, or even consider HUD. We also actually have a huge HUD practice.
Okay.
And you know, explore your options. If you're doing affordable, there could be savings if you go into one of these programs, because again, they're going to incentivize these good behaviors. If you're thinking about green, they're going to incentivize these good behavior. So really take a look at them and don't be deterred by, you know, the red tape. A good attorney can lead you through that, and you may find that you're going to get the best deal. And you know, I was talking to one of my colleagues, a HUD attorney, and he said, "I said, why do people do HUD loans?" And I'm not a HUD expert. My colleague is, but he says, "Well, you know, yes, they take forever to close, But the interest is so good that, you know, later on it makes the property easier to sell because people want to assume the hard terms.
Yeah, they've already gone through the headache of getting the loan.
That's right.
So it's just easier to assume.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Fannie and Freddie, two or three months closings possible, you know, maybe a little bit faster than HUD. But, you know, so there's different products out there for your needs in terms of speed, in terms of, but, you know, if you can get an agency loan, usually they're the best price.
Okay, well, very good. So hire a good
producer,
and that's an originator, broker, whatever you call. Not all brokers are the same. And if you want to identify a good broker, ask for references or ask to see the financial package or an example of the financial proposal they put together. Because and then, you know, and then who else in the industry that can vouch for them, you know, in terms of attorneys or closing agents? You know, you want to find out who that best producer is. And then the second one you recommend, consider
agency loan.
And then what would be the third?
The third point would be, and I said it before, is don't take a passive role. You know, you hire the legal expert, but at the end of the day, it's your wealth, it's your well-being at stake. So take an active role in supervising your attorney.
Okay.
I mean, don't get into that way in
right.
terms of if they're trying to help you, but,
right.
you know, ask to be copied on email. It's your right. And I think that's how you learn, is you follow along and see what, you know, because you can tell, is he representing me well? Is he doing the work? Is he responsive to the lender? Mm. And your presence on the email,
it means a lot.
It means a lot. So
yeah.
if you're working with a borrower's counsel that says, don't worry, I'll take care of it, and you know it's best you are not copied, maybe say, you know, actually I want to be CC'd on all the emails, because even if you think the legal jargons, everything, it's intimidating, well, you know, you can get a sense of the deal flow,
right?
Just being copied on an email, and again, you learn from this, and
right.
that after a while, if you work with certain products, and that's why I said talk to your producer, and it's very, it can be lender specific. Some lenders will accommodate and say, "Look, I've done so many of these guys. Do I really have to hire borrower's counsel?" Mm. So you could save costs there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So number three would be hire a good attorney, but make sure you stay involved.
That's right.
You know, don't abdicate. You've hired them to do a job, but it's your responsibility to supervise them. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree.
Yeah. So, Mr. Dewey Nguyen, Mr. Nguyen, expert attorney with the Carlton. Carlton Fields Law Firm.
Yeah.
And there you have offices in D.C.
California,
all over. They represent the lender. So from a lender's attorney's perspective, you have an opportunity to see firsthand on the things that should be important to you. Thank you so much for being a part of our show. And we hope you and the audience really appreciated the quality and the level of guests that we bring. And if you do, do us a favor. Make sure that you subscribe to our podcast and that you like our episode. This goes a long way in helping us attract good quality guests that give us insider information on how to help you make the best choices when you decide to pursue agency loans or any type of lending, or when you're looking for advice in general with regards to commercial real estate. Again, thank you so much for being part of our show. And Mr. Nguyen, thank you for being a part of our show as well. And we look forward to having you back at some point in the future.
Thank you, Charles.
All right. Thank
you. It's a pleasure.